There, this is the romance program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got two stories coming up this hour. The first one is from True Romance Magazine. It's called A Ghost Story. Here's the story. "I don't believe in ghosts," proclaimed Lindsay, taking another draw on her chocolate milkshake. "Well, I do, and if you had listened to as many ghost tales as I did growing up, so would you," I said, taking another bite of my tuna salad sandwich. Each day at noon, the four of us, Lindsay, Brenda, Alice, and I, get together in the office break room to eat lunch and discuss whatever topics pops up. On that particular Monday, with Halloween only a couple of weeks away, it just so happened to be ghosts. "I'm with Megan. I think there are spirits that walk this earth." "Brenda, you always side with Megan. Before I believe in them, I'll have to see one with my own two eyes," Alice declared and went back to her salad. I swallowed the last bite of my lunch. "My grandmother called them haints and spooks. She told me she once lived in a house where, after she went to bed, she heard footsteps come up the stairs and stop in front of her bedroom door. The door never opened, and after a few moments, the footsteps took the same path away until they completely faded." "That gives me goosebumps," Brenda shivered. Alice laughed. "Like I said, I'll have to see one. How would you like to sit in on a real séance?" Lindsay spoke up, smiling impishly. I couldn't tell if she was kidding or not, and how are we supposed to do that? "My Aunt Bernadette is obsessed with ghosts. She and her friend Louise belong to some club where they participate in seances. According to Aunt Bernadette, the club has actually contacted spirits. Of course, it's my opinion that someone making that stuff happen, someone is making the stuff happen, but I don't tell her that. Well, what do you think?"
"I don't know," said Brenda. "Sounds awful spooky."
"Oh, come on. It'll be fun. Besides, we won't let any old ghost get you," Alice teased. "Well, okay," Brenda reluctantly agreed. "But if things get too strange, I'm leaving." I looked at my watch and stood up, brushing crumbs from my lap. "Count me in. I'd love to have the chance to participate in a séance, Lindsay. When do you think you'll talk to your aunt?" "We're having dinner together tonight. I'll let you know something tomorrow."
It just so happened that Aunt Bernadette's club had plans to go to a séance that very Friday. They were thrilled that Lindsay and her friends wanted to tag along. We left together right after work, with Lindsay driving and following Aunt Bernadette's directions. She stopped the car in front of an old two-story house, partially hidden by a cove of ancient oak trees. "This is the place. Creepy looking, isn't it?" Brenda frowned. "Too creepy, if you ask me." We walked along an ivy-draped fence and entered the property through an iron gate that clanged shut behind us, causing us all to jump. On our walk up into the house, I thought I saw a movement from an upstairs window, but when I stopped and looked, there was nothing. I shrugged it off as my overactive imagination and the spooky surroundings. Aunt Bernadette greeted us at the front door, wearing a black caftan and holding a candle in her hand. "Lindsay, dear, you don't know how thrilled I am that you and your friends decided to join us tonight. Follow me, girls. You're in for a treat." The door opened up into a large entryway. Across the room from us, a staircase curved up to a second floor.
We turned left into what was once the parlor. A large table sat in the center of the room, surrounded by chairs. Dark draperies covered the windows, blocking any light from the outside. Bunches of candles sat about the room, casting eerie, twisting shadows across the peeling wallpaper. Two middle-aged gentlemen, Tim and Lou, and an older lady, Aunt Bernadette's friend, Louise, were introduced to us, along with three others, Josephine, Delia, and Phyllis. A woman walked into the room. "It's time for us to get started, wouldn't it? Would everyone please take their seat?" I'll admit I felt a certain excitement as I chose a seat between Alice and Brenda. Lindsay sat across the table from me, flanked by the middle-aged gentleman, while Bernadette and Louise sat on the other side of the lady, who seemed to be in charge. The woman cleared her throat and the room grew quiet. "Good evening, everyone. I am Abigail Wheeler, the medium for tonight's seance. Before we begin, I want to tell you a bit about the history of this old house. In 1899, Martin Smith commissioned it to be built for his new wife, Lily Curtis Smith, as a wedding gift. From the beginning, they were dubbed a perfect match. After several years, the relationship became strained as it became evident that Lily would never conceive a child. Martin Smith began staying away from home more and more, and Lily confided in a close friend that she believed there was a mistress. Poor Lily became withdrawn and kept to her room. Before long, the news reached her that her husband's mistress was carrying his child, the one thing she'd been unable to do as his wife. She sank into a deep depression until that fateful morning. The housekeeper found her dangling from the end of a rope tied to the banisters at the top of the stairs. We are here tonight to contact Lily Smith. It is said that her spirit roams this house and has been watching intently for her husband's return from her bedroom window. Even though it was quite warm in the parlor, a chill ran down my spine, and I shivered. Could that have been Lily's window? I believe that spirits walk the earth. I just wasn't sure if I was ready to meet one face to face. Abigail looked around the room, extinguished all of the candles but the one in the middle of the table. Aunt Bernadette complied and sat back down. Nothing was visible in the room but the faces of the people around the table. "Now, everyone hold hands, close your eyes, and clear your minds. A clear mind is a receptive mind." I did as she said, clearing my mind as much as possible under the circumstances. Brenda was squeezing my right hand so tightly my fingers were beginning to ache. I leaned close to her and whispered, "You're cutting off my circulation. Quiet. I must have absolute quiet," demanded Abigail. Once Brenda loosened her death grip on my hand, I concentrated on what the medium was saying. Once it was my first silence, or since it was, I didn't want to miss a thing. I opened my eyes. Abigail sat with her eyes closed, her head tilted forward. "Lily, if you can hear me, give us a sign. We mean no harm to you. We just wish to contact you." The room was quiet except for the sound of our breathing, deathly quiet. "Lily, join us here at this table. We would very much like to contact you." Suddenly, Abigail slumped over in her chair, as limp as a dish rag. Her chin rested on her chest and her mouth was slightly ajar. She began moaning softly, then louder and louder. She suddenly sat upright and began speaking in a voice that wasn't her own. "Martin," she wept, "I loved you." Her features seemed to shift before my eyes. As the weeping turned to wailing, my heart was pounding like a hammer against my chest, and Brenda's hand was trembling in mine. Then Abigail threw her head back, and a blood-curdling scream cut through the darkened room like a knife. Brenda let go of my hand and darted for the front door like she had the devil at her heels. Lindsay, Alice, and I weren't far behind. I don't know how any of us found the front door in the dark house, but we didn't stop running until we reached the iron gate. Brenda stood bent over, her hands on her knees, trying to catch her breath. "I've never been so scared in my entire life. I don't know why I let you talk me into things." "Well, I, for one, can't remember when I've had that much excitement." Lindsay pulled her car keys out of her pocket. "Me either, but I'm ready to go home. I'll probably hear that woman screaming in my dreams," declared Brenda, the first one to reach the car. I looked back at the house. A woman dressed in white stood staring out a window on the second floor, the same one I had observed earlier. "Who do you suppose that is in the window?" I asked. Alice laughed. "Maybe it's Lily." I shivered and got in the car. Monday at noon, the four of us gathered around our usual table. I'd gone to visit my parents over the weekend and hadn't spoken to the girls since they dropped me off on Friday night. Well, Brenda, did the seance give you nightmares? I took a sip of my Diet Coke. Are you kidding? I didn't even turn the lights out in my apartment all Friday night. When that woman became possessed by the spirit of Lily, I thought I was going to faint. We all laughed. "You know, the whole thing was a show," Alice declared. "I'll bet she was no more possessed by a spirit than I was." She smiled, pulling off the remainder of the crust from her sandwich. I leaned back in my chair and looked at her over my Coke. "I, for one, believe it was for real. Don't tell me you're still skeptical after what you witnessed." Alice shrugged her shoulders. "It's going to take more than an old lady pretending to be someone else and screaming at the top of her lungs to persuade me that spirits hang around after death." "Megan, I ate lunch with Aunt Bernadette on Saturday, and I told her what you said about seeing someone in the upstairs window. You won't believe what she said." She took another bite of her meatball sub. "Lindsay, stop eating and tell me," I said anxiously. She swallowed. No one had gone upstairs and nobody else was in the house. "Aunt Bernadette said you saw the ghostly figure of Lily Smith watching out her bedroom window for her husband's return." Alice rolled her eyes. "Hogwash. It was just your imagination, Megan." "But what if it's not hogwash? What if it really was the spirit of that poor lady?" Brenda interceded. The break room grew quiet as we pondered what Brenda had just said. Then I got an idea. "Why don't we go check the house out on our own? After all, Saturday will be Halloween, and since we're a bit too old to play dress up, this could be our best Halloween yet." Brenda looked at me like I'd lost my mind. "You have got to be kidding, Megan. Didn't you get enough of that place on Friday? I sure did." "Oh, Brenda, you know you're as curious as the rest of us. How about it?" She didn't answer me immediately. I'll think about it. What about you two?
Sure, why not? I've nothing better to do, declared Alice.
Lindsay raised her hand. Count me in. Anything's got to be more exciting than my love life as of late. We made plans to meet at the mall and ride together to the Smith House around 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Though night comes early in October, I wasn't brave enough to go back in the house in the pitch dark, especially on Halloween. I hadn't told the others, but ever since the seance, I hadn't been able to get the mysterious lady in the window out of my mind. If it was all a farce, I wanted to know, and if it was the real thing, I wanted to know that too, and that meant checking out that bedroom. We got a good look at the outside of the house in the daylight. The inside was in better shape than the outside, which needed some paint and several broken window panes repaired. As we walked up the brick walk, made uneven by numerous cold winters, I kept my gaze on the upstairs window. I turned the knob and the door didn't budge. I shoved my shoulder against the door, not very hard, but nonetheless the door jamb shattered and I practically fell through the door. Lindsay and Alice followed me inside, but Brenda hung back.
"Aren't you coming inside?" I asked. "I don't know if I want to. I wasn't happy the first time I was here, and I'm not happy now."
"Oh, Brenda, if there are earthbound spirits roaming this house, they haven't harmed anyone." She cocked her head sideways. And
just how do you know that, Megan?"
"Brenda had me there. Well, have you ever heard of anyone being haunted in this house?"
"No."
"See, what did I tell you? Guys, in case you haven't noticed, it's getting darker and darker while the two of you debate," Alice pointed out. I looked toward the stairs. They looked more foreboding than I remembered.
"Okay, let's go, Brenda. You can wait on the porch if you don't want to come along."
She sighed and stepped through the open door. "All right, I'll go with you," she said reluctantly. Inside the house, the light grew dimmer by the minute. We took out the flashlights we'd brought along and began to look around. I wanted to go upstairs to satisfy my own curiosity, so I headed for the curved staircase that wound to the left, ending it at the landing where Lily Smith had hanged herself many years before. Lindsay was behind me with Brenda bringing up the rear. The century-old steps creaked beneath our combined weight, sending eerie echoes bouncing off the walls of the empty house. Reaching the landing, we stopped and took a look around. A cool breeze blew past me. "Did anyone else feel that?"
"If you're talking about the breeze, then yes," said Alice. "Probably came from a broken window."
Lindsay trained her flashlight on the banisters. "Poor woman, she must have felt so sad and depressed to hang herself like that. If I were Lily, I'd never return to relive that awful memory in the house." Surprised, I looked at her. "I thought you were a skeptic." "Well, I am, sort of. It's just that this place makes a person wonder. Where do we go from here, Megan?" Alice positioned her flashlight on the floor below. "Let's take a look in the bedroom where I saw the lady in white. We should be able to tell if anybody's been moving around in there. I started down the long hallway, pointing the beam of light up ahead. I paused to take a look in the first of the bedrooms and then moved on to the next. I think this is the one. Come on and help me look for any sign that somebody's been in there.
I walked over to the window and looked out. It was the right bedroom. We were there for a couple of minutes, then the air became thick with the scent of perfume. Doesn't anyone else smell perfume? Or does anyone? I asked. Lindsay sniffed the air. I do, clearly. It wasn't here when we came in. Alice didn't offer an explanation, which wasn't like her. Brenda took hold of my arm and pulled me toward the door. I think we've been here long enough. First it was that breeze that came from out of nowhere. Now there's the smell of perfume. Let's get out of this place before something happens. I pulled my arm out of Brenda's grasp. Did anyone find anything? Lindsay and Alice shook their heads. Brenda grabbed me by the arm again. Me either. Now, can we go? All right, let's go, I sighed. The dust in the bedroom hadn't been disturbed. One thing was certain. No mortal had been standing at that window. I followed the others back to the landing and took a last look behind me. At the other end of the hall, I saw something I couldn't quite make out. Look at that. What do you think that is? I pointed down the hall. They pointed their lights in the direction of mine. Alice squinted. Whatever it is, it's getting closer. The air suddenly became much colder. We stood frozen in place as we watched the apparition come closer and closer, and its identity became apparent. Lily's spirit did indeed still roam the halls. I couldn't be certain if she was looking at us or through us. She was within a few feet of us when Brenda sprang to life and ran down the stairs. Screaming at the top of her lungs, I brought up the rear, the hair on the back of my neck standing up as I expected her to reach out and grab me at any moment. As I raced out the front door, I came face to face with a man. Unable to stop, I hit him full force, knocking him off the porch and into the yard, and I landed right on top of him. I was mortified. I'm very sorry. I didn't see you, I stammered. He got up and dusted off his jeans. Ladies, you're trespassing on private property. I'm Officer Joe Chalmers. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't arrest the bunch of you. I cleared my throat. Maybe I can explain. We were here last weekend and we sat in on a séance with some other people. We didn't know we would be trespassing if we came here tonight. He propped his hands on his hips and looked at me like I had sprouted a horn in the middle of my forehead. I don't give much credence to seances and that sort of stuff. All I know is that the caretaker saw lights on the second floor and called the office. I was off duty and I volunteered to check it out on my way home. He thought it might be a bunch of kids messing around doing Halloween pranks. Wait until I tell him it was a bunch of grown women. I felt my temperature rise beneath his scrutiny. But there is one other thing I want to know. What were you running from? Brenda spoke up. The ghost of Lily Smith. Joe chuckled and shook his head. You can't be serious. He's right. I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, Alice explained. Lindsay pointed to the house. Officer, I've always been somewhat of a skeptic, not as much as Alice there, but tonight has made a believer out of me. He looked at me. What about you?
Me, I've always been a believer, but even I wasn't ready to see Lily's spirit floating down the hall, a foot off the ground toward me. It was quite unnerving. How did you get inside? Only the caretaker has the key. I shoved my hands into the pockets of my jeans. Well, I pushed on the door. The wood around the lock was sort of rotten. I had to admit I sounded like a burglar. He shook his head in disbelief. I'll need all your names and addresses. I'll let the owner know what happened here. It's up to him whether or not he presses charges. He looked directly at me. You don't look like the sort of lady who goes around breaking into houses. I hope this one was your first and last. It will be, I promised. Next time I'll use a key. That's better. All of you follow me back to my car so I can get your information. We stopped beside a black SUV and waited while Officer Joe took a notebook off the passenger seat. He flipped to a clean page. Now I need names and addresses, beginning with you. He pointed at me. I sat in the passenger seat while he wrote down my information, using the interior light to see. He was handsome, and I noticed he wasn't wearing a wedding band. For some odd reason, that made me feel good. I'm really sorry you have to do this on your time off, especially on a Friday night. You probably had a date or a Halloween party we're keeping you from. He looked up at me for a moment. No date, no party either. He went back to writing. Nothing more was said until he finished with me. He handed me my driver's license and smiled. Okay, you can go. Send in the next one. When I reached for my license, he held on briefly before turning it loose. I looked up and our gazes locked. The attraction I had for him was nothing like I'd ever experienced in all my 26 years. Before I did or said something completely stupid, I got out and sent Brenda his way. I waited in my car for the detective to finish and drove the others back to the mall to pick up their cars. I went home and took a shower, wondering if the excitement strumming through my veins was due to Lily's ghost or the handsome detective. The phone rang, and deep in thought, I nearly jumped out of my skin. Hello? Megan Hayes? A pause on the line. Yes, who's this? This is Detective Chalmers. Sorry to call so late. I thought you'd like to know that the caretaker isn't going to press charges, but he does want the door fixed as soon as possible. I assured him that you would personally see that it was taken care of. Was I correct? His voice flowed over the phone like syrup over pancakes. Yes, certainly. I'll call a carpenter first thing in the morning. Miss Hayes, please call me Megan. Megan, I was wondering if you might have dinner with me tomorrow night. That is, if you don't have other plans. I danced in place, silent screams of joy coming out of my open mouth. Max, my cat, thought I had gone insane and dashed under the bed. Let me think. No, I don't have any plans. I would be happy to have dinner with you. Great, I'll pick you up at 7. Fine, let me give you my address. Never mind, I already have it. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'll see you at 7. I thought 7 o'clock would never come. We drove to a little place that was decorated retro 50s and sat in a private booth across from one another while Elvis belted out, "You ain't nothing but a hound dog," on the jukebox. I took a sip of my sweet tea. I hope I didn't hurt you last night. I did hit you pretty hard. I'll live, but I would like to know something. What's that? What really happened in that house? Like I told you last night, we saw a ghost. I told him the story of Lily's life, about how she roams the halls of the old house because her spirit can't rest. I've always believed last night was only a confirmation of that belief. They brought our dinner then, and we spent the rest of the evening talking about our hopes and dreams, and I decided I could easily fall in love with Joe. Joe drove me home and walked me to the front door. "Megan, I had a great time tonight. Me too. I'd like to see you again soon. After all, it's not every day that I find a girl who knocks me off my feet," he said. And then he kissed me.
Okay, that's the end of that story. If you tuned in late, this is the Romance Program with volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. My next story is from True Confessions magazine. It's called In My Mother's Footsteps. Here's the story.
"Mama, please, don't hit me." My mother stood over me with a belt in her hands. The angry look on her face told me she was going to hit me like she always did when she was angry. I held up my arms, trying to ward off the blows, and woke up. Someone was shaking me and calling my name. "Mama, please get up," chirped the voice of my youngest child. "Dakota, haven't I told you not to wake me up when I'm taking a nap? Mama, it's getting dark outside and Daddy will be home soon. Matthew wants to know if he can fix mac and cheese for dinner. Please let him, Mama. I'm so hungry." My son's voice tore at my heart. What sort of mother am I? I should be in the kitchen fixing dinner. I got up and stumbled into the bathroom. After washing my face and reapplying my makeup, I looked better. Will it be enough to fool my husband? Lately, he'd been so critical of me, blaming me for everything. I couldn't understand why he got upset about my drinking a few beers every day. He drank, so why shouldn't I? I heard a car door slam, and I knew that Clive was home. Rushing into the kitchen, I noticed that Matthew had the water boiling for the macaroni. He moved away from the stove when he saw me. He knew I'd want to be there when Clive walked in the door. That way Clive would think I was the one making dinner. The front door opened and I heard Clive talking to Dakota. I pulled a mint from my pocket and sucked on it, praying that it would do the trick. Clive could smell booze on my breath a mile away. "Hi, honey, what's for dinner?" I pretended to stir the pot so that I didn't have to look at him. Clive walked up and put his arms around me. The kiss he planted on my cheek sent tingles up and down my spine. Letting go of me, Clive turned and walked toward the bedroom. He always changed his clothes before dinner. Relief flooded through me and I began to breathe normally again. My husband stopped and turned back to me. "By the way, don't think you've fooled me with that candy. I know you've been drinking again. Look me in the eye and tell me I'm wrong." I froze and stood there with my head down. His accusations angered and shamed me. "I'm not stupid. You're not fooling anyone but yourself. How much longer do the kids and I have to put up with this before you do something about it? You need to get help." I dropped the spoon into the pasta. Tears poured down my cheeks and my voice shook. "Don't give me that lecture, Clive. You drink beer all the time, so why can't I? Do you think you're better than I am? Don't get all defensive with me. I'm not the bad guy here, Cindy. I drink 2 beers to your 6, and I can hold my liquor. You can't." I stomped out the door to the car, but Clive followed me and grabbed my arm. "Where do you think you're going? I'm not going to let you drive in this condition, even if I didn't care what happened to you. You could hurt someone else. Get back in the house. Try and make me." Clive shook his head and walked back to the house. I heard the door slam and I was alone. He'd taken the car keys with him. Driving the car was no longer an option. "I don't need you, Clive," I shouted. I headed down the street to my girlfriend's house. I knew she'd help me. Sheila's husband answered the door. "Hi, Bob. You got a beer I can borrow? I gave him my best smile, but he didn't return it. We don't have any beer, Cindy. Go home. Your husband and your kids need you. The creep slammed the door in my face. I stood there for a few minutes, hoping that Sheila would open the door and invite me in. Then I heard voices coming from the inside and from inside the house. It sounded like Sheila and Bob were arguing about me. Sheila, let me in. The door opened a crack. Sheila, it's getting cold out here. Come on, open up and let me in. I can't. You heard what Bob said. I'm sorry, Cindy, but I'm not going to risk my marriage just so you can have a beer. You need to get a grip and stop running from your responsibilities. I can't help you anymore. Go home to your family. She closed the door in my face, and I started crying, hoping to incite her sympathy. Surely she'd change her mind if she heard me sobbing outside. I was wrong. The door remained closed. It was getting colder, and I started to shiver. Why didn't I think to bring a jacket before I left the house? I didn't want to go home. I knew Clive would be waiting with a lecture. I couldn't face the children either. Pride and shame kept me from going home, so I decided to walk over to my aunt's house. It was several blocks away, but I didn't know what else to do. Aunt Betty's face lit up when she saw me. Come on in, honey. It's cold outside. Did you drive over here? I don't see your car. No, I walked. I stood there rubbing my arms. I was shaking and my teeth were chattering. Here, Cindy, take this and I'll make us some hot tea. I took the blanket she handed me and wrapped myself in it. It felt so good to be there. My aunt had always been kind to me. She'd stood up and defended me from Mama more than once when I was a kid. Thoughts of Mama always brought pain. I recalled my nightmare and pushed it to the back of my mind. I couldn't bear thinking about it. Be careful, sweetheart. The tea's really hot, but you look like you need it. I hope you're not going to be sick walking over here on a night like this with no jacket. A light sweater just isn't enough. Thanks, Annie. I needed this. Anyone else would have taunted me about wanting a beer, but my aunt knew better. She loved me for myself, and I didn't have to pretend. Now tell me what's wrong. Cindy, you didn't just walk all the way over here on a lark. Something's up, and I want to know what, so spill. It's Clive. He doesn't like my drinking. It's not fair, Auntie. Clive drinks, too. Aunt Betty frowned, and I knew that she was going to take my side. She always did. Now, Cindy, you know that you drink more than Clive does. She looked down and I bit my lip, trying to hide the shock and hurt I felt at my aunt's betrayal. Doesn't anyone care about me? I've never said anything to you before, but I think it's time. Honey, you've got to get help. You're becoming just like your mother. Do you want to do that to your kids? You're putting them through the same hell your mother put you through. I think that would bother you. I stood up and let the blanket drop to the floor. I was furious. How dare you? How can you, of all people, accuse me of being like my mother? I'm nothing like her. She was a mean drunk. I'm not mean, and I'm not a drunk. Newsflash, a few beers doesn't make me a drunk. My aunt sat there shaking her head and looking sad. I watched as tears began rolling down her cheeks. Honey, you're not mean yet, but you drink every day. Your kids are raising themselves. Clive can't do it all and work too. How much longer do you think he's going to put up with you? He works hard all day. When he comes home, he wants to find a loving wife taking care of his children. Instead, he finds you drunk or passed out. You've abandoned your family, Cindy, and you're losing yourself. You're wrong, I shouted. I take care of my kids. I love them, and they know it. Just because I'm making them learn to cook doesn't mean I'm not a good mom. Kids need some responsibility. I'm sorry, Cindy. I failed you by not trying to take you away from my sister. I didn't dream you'd turn out like her. It's not too late, honey. You can still change your life. I'm going to drive you home. I'll call Clive and tell him you're here. Leave me alone. I can take care of myself. No, you can't. She left me for a few minutes. My aunt had abandoned me, and there was no one left for me to turn to. I sat there on her couch, feeling more alone than I ever had before. Why can't anyone understand? I've called Clive. I think it's best if he takes you home. I don't know that I can handle you if you decide to pull some shenanigan while I'm driving. Would you like some more tea while we wait? No, I don't want any more of your stupid tea. I want a beer. I struggled to my feet again and tripped over the blanket that still lay on the floor. I fell to my knees and stayed there, unsure of what to do. You're not going anywhere but home. Now get up and sit down. It's time you grew up. Neither of us said another word while we waited for Clive to pick me up. Aunt Betty looked disappointed, but I didn't care. I couldn't look at her, so I pulled the blanket close and hid my face like a child. When Clive arrived, he led me out of the house to the car. "Where are the kids?" I asked. I asked Sheila to watch them. They're going to spend the night at her house. I didn't want them to see you like this. Why not? I felt like punching Clive. He had no right to keep the kids from me. Good grief, Cindy, don't you have any love for them at all? Look at what you're putting them through. It's what your mother did to you. Shut up, I yelled. I'm not like her. I don't beat my kids. No, but your actions are abusive. I hit him on the arm, and he swerved the car, narrowly missing a truck. Clive pulled over and stopped. Don't ever do that again, Cindy. You know I've had it. Either you agree to get some help with your drinking, or I want you out of the house. The kids and I have put up with it long enough. You can't throw me out, I said with a slur. Watch me. Clive turned the car around and headed back to my aunt's house. He pulled up in front, opened the door on my side, and pulled me out. He dragged me up the steps and knocked on the door. My aunt opened it. She didn't look happy to see us. What is it, Clive? I'm leaving Cindy here. You can do with her what you want, but I'm through. She can't come home until she gets her act together. He left me standing there, and I watched him drive away. He never looked back once. He doesn't mean it. He'll be back for me, I said to Aunt Betty. I wouldn't count on it. I don't want you here either, but you can stay tonight. You'll have to behave yourself, she warned. Aunt Betty made me shower, and she lent me some of her clothes to wear. Neither of us said much. I was angry and hurt, and all I wanted to do was wallow in self-pity. I lay in bed that night, remembering my childhood. As soon as I learned to climb a tree, I began to use my skills to hide from my mother. There was an old oak down the block where I spent hours. It was the only place I felt safe. Mama couldn't find me there. Dad walked out when I was 16. He couldn't take it anymore. The next year I left home. Aunt Betty told me I could live with her, but I knew Mama would find me and drag me home. It was rough being on my own like that, but I learned to cope. I found jobs waiting tables. When I was 18, I met Clive. He was a customer at the diner I worked at. We enjoyed talking, and it wasn't long before he asked me out. We dated for a few months, and then he proposed on a lovely day in October. The whole world seemed golden. I was ecstatic. I would have a home and someone to love me. That's what I wanted most in the world. We had our first child when I was 19. I wasn't ready for it, but accidents happen. We made do. I love both of my children.
I know it doesn't seem like it with my drinking, but I do. I never set out to be a drunk. Sometimes life sends trouble your way, but you learn to deal with it. I tried, but alcohol had a hold on me. Clive didn't mind at first, but as my drinking speeded up, it pushed us apart. But there I was on my own again, with nowhere to go. I knew my aunt didn't want me around. I'd have to leave, but where would I go? The next morning, Aunt Betty made pancakes and coffee for breakfast. I wasn't hungry, but I made myself eat. I didn't know where or when I'd get another meal. My aunt poured herself a cup of coffee and gave me a refill. I've been thinking, Cindy, if you'll do what I say, I'll be glad to help you out. I won't put up with a drunk who's self-destructing. Are we clear on that? Perfectly, I said as I sipped my coffee. It was hard to look at her. I thought you loved me. I do, but that doesn't mean I'm going to let you ruin my life. You're on the same path as your mother. All that a bottle of booze got her was loneliness, misery, and an early grave. I don't want that for you, honey, but you're the only one who can change your life. I gave her a hard look. What do you want me to do? I want you to get help, Cindy. I'll get you in rehab and pay for your stay, but you have to be willing to make the effort. I can't make you quit drinking. That's up to you. I don't know if I can do it. Do you want your husband and kids back? Of course I do. Then you'll do whatever it takes. You're a strong person, Cindy. I know you can get through this. Are you willing to give it a try? What could I do but agree? I had nowhere else to turn. Aunt Betty was my last chance. All right, I'll do it. What happens if rehab doesn't work? We'll worry about that when it happens. You need to go in with a positive attitude, dear. Easy for you to say, I muttered. You're lucky you never had to go through this. Listen to me, young woman. Don't you think I suffered seeing my only sister throw her life away? Everyone who loved her suffered. You loved Mama? Of course I did. She was my baby sister. I always felt that I let her down somehow. It's terrible to see someone you love. Aunt Betty couldn't finish the sentence. I saw that she was crying. I reached out and hugged her. You didn't let her down, I whispered. She let herself down. I'm sorry I've had to take a hard line with you, Cindy. If I don't, then I'm just helping enforce your behavior, and I won't do that. I understand. I didn't, but I was trying to. I've called Clive, and he's bringing some clothes over for you. The doorbell rang. It's probably him. I'll get it, Cindy. I got up and followed her to the door. She opened it, and I saw my husband standing there with a suitcase. He handed it to my aunt and turned to go. Wait, I called. He stopped, but he didn't turn around. I won't have anything to say to you until you're out of rehab, he said in a gruff voice. I'll do it. I'll make you and the kids proud, honey. I hope he'd say something, but he kept on going. He still loves you, Cindy. You're going to have to stop drinking before he's going to talk to you again. He's hurting now, and he doesn't want to give in and take you home. Do you understand that? Of course I do. I started crying again. I couldn't help myself. I was so afraid I'd fail. What if I can't stop drinking? Mama drank until the day she died. What if I'm just like her? A couple of days later, Aunt Betty drove me to rehab. I've never felt more alone in my life as I watched her leave. I wanted to call after her and beg her to take me home, but I knew it wasn't a choice. I took a deep breath and I followed the attendant to my room. I don't remember much about those weeks in rehab. I was living a nightmare. The days and hours went slowly by, and I wondered if I'd ever see my family again. Some days it was all I could do to lift my head off the pillow
to face a new day. The day finally came when they released me. I thought Aunt Betty would pick me up, but Clive was waiting for me. He helped me into the car, and we drove away. Neither of us said much. "Are you taking me to my aunt's house?" "No, I'm taking you home. The kids are eager to see you." I got a tissue out of the glove compartment and wiped the tears from my face. "Clive, I'm so sorry. I never meant to let you and the kids down." "I know," he said quietly. He reached over and took my hand for a moment. I'll never forget that day. It was the beginning of a new life for my family and I. I've learned to take life one day at a time. I'd like to tell you that I've never wanted to drink another beer, but I'd be lying. I have to fight the urge every day. Thank heaven my family is there for me. I don't think I could do it without them. I've forgiven Mama. It's taken me years to do it, but I've walked the same path she did. I'm the lucky one because I got a second chance. Okay, that's the end of that story. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. As always, thank you so much for listening to me and my stories and poems I've enjoyed reading to you. I will talk to you later next week. In the meantime, have a great week and take care. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Bye-bye.